Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10K Collective, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers and indeed e-commerce sellers. So this is another interview with Ashley Pierce of Future State Media. Ashley Pierce has been in the mastermind, the 10K Collective, that I've been running for, it's got to be since close to the beginning, so over 2 years now. We've had him in on interviews in the Amazing FBA podcast and the 10K Collective podcast at roughly sort of 8 to 12 month interval. So it's been very interesting to follow the journey. And we're going to talk about that journey today in slightly more abstract strategy session coming up, be warned. But I do think it's very, very relevant to any business owners, particularly in the e-commerce space. So Ashley, warm welcome back.
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
Yeah. So we had you back in May 2019. You were talking about your e-commerce growth there. And I know that you've got up to pretty much seven figures annually in a run rate, which is great in dollars. So we talked in the last episode about what you've been up to with Future State Media and all the very impressive stuff that you've developed, a very structured and professional approach to Google SEO that seems to be paying off very well for your e-commerce business. So that brings up the obvious question that comes up a lot, which is how did you even arrive at the idea of doing something that's different from e-commerce? I mean, there is an argument that says, if you just focus on one thing, that thing will get better and you'll do a lot better than trying to do multiple different things. And obviously you and I are sort of people that naturally seem to be driven to do multiple different projects. And the question comes up then, is this a good plan? And if so, why are you doing it?
It's a really good question. It's a question that we've asked ourselves as well. So don't go thinking that we've not evaluated that. We definitely have. But yeah, it kind of boils down to the fact that we've been doing a lot of innovation in our e-commerce business around external traffic for Amazon. So that's everything from Google SEO and kind of mimicking and learning what we can from the Amazon affiliate space and even broader field than that, really, through to Pinterest SEO and taking Pinterest much more scientifically than anything else out there on the internet will teach you or show you. And developing our own internal systems for sort of managing that process. And then right the way through to kind of how to use the highest ROI type of ads. So instead of hitting cold traffic with ads, but using remarketing ads. So using the organic traffic to prep the barrel of the gun, if you like, and then using the remarketing ads, you know, the things that people are in the e-com world are more sort of attuned with, more commonly acquainted with. But instead of just hitting it up, you know, targeting keywords, actually targeting audiences, very warm audiences, not lookalike audiences, actually the people who have actually visited your website and trying to bring them back with a sexy offer. So we've been doing all of that within our own business. And as I said, as you mentioned there, Michael, we're at seven figures and growing. But some of the tactics and strategies that we've been developing are kind of quite big picture. They've taken a lot of R&D, and actually they would be just as at home in an 8, 9 and 10 figure brand as they are sat in our seven figure business, because they're very strategically led. They're very principally aligned with just good marketing practices and things that very easily scale if you get behind them. So we're not doing things, we're not doing guerrilla tactics or anything that kind of is too scrappy and too involved and kind of very specific to a set 6 or 7 figure Amazon seller. These are things that are applicable whether you're doing 6 figures, 7 figures or above, because these strategies and tactics just scale. And actually with the more free cash we have available to throw into these sorts of systems, the bigger and better you can get, the quicker you can get there. So yeah, that's kind of the principle that kind of made us think about Future State Media and what it is that we'd developed within our own e-com business. We'd actually generated all of this IP know-how, and essentially that's something that kind of I'm quite commonly acquainted with from the corporate world of kind of looking at intellectual capital and financial capital and how you move between one and the other in a strategic manner. So that's kind of how we did the evaluation. We looked at our business, the whole business, and the portfolio that exists. And we said, well, what intellectual capital do we have? What financial capital do we have? As with most Amazon sellers, we're kind of maximizing our financial capital and turning the stock really quickly and doing what we can with that and doing really good lean cash flow management. So we turned to the intellectual capital and said, right, how do we turn that into some financial capital to help us grow? And the answer really was to monetize our know-how and the stuff that we'd understood and learned and developed around Google SEO, Pinterest SEO, and remarketing with low-cost, high ROI ads, and monetize that through Future State Media. And that's pretty much how we ended up there.
That makes a lot of sense, and I guess that's the reason, I suppose, why a lot of people work on Amazon agencies, because there's a financial limit. Would you say then that that's, that everyone's going to have financial limits, and there's always the perennial discussion of how do we get more cash to put into the business? I suppose the traditional answers are that you invest more equity if you have it yourself, or you have some wealthy relatives, or you can persuade somebody else to do it, which is an interesting conversation. External debt equity, so it could be anything from credit cards, which I know you've been a user of in the past, the zero balance transfer, and any way up to big bank loans. I know some people in the masterminds have some pretty serious bank loans on their books, and I guess those are the principal things, right? But what made you decide to go the agency route rather than the sort of money raising route? Because both do happen quite a lot.
Most definitely, yeah. The big one for me was that we're pretty good with our money, and we've got good credit lines already. As you mentioned, we're quite good with credit cards and things like that, and we do use relatively reasonable interest rate loans and credit cards to particularly get us through peaks. And those peaks are measured in days usually across the year, that we in particular kind of rely on them. And capital advances are great and Amazon loans are great, but fundamentally we're running at full chat to make that work, and to kind of take on higher risk capital in an organization where we're trying to run quite quickly, and the potential risk and impact on your Amazon business is variable day to day, but there's always the underlying feeling that, you know, an account suspension could really trip you up. At the moment, we'd manage our way through with the financial mechanisms that we've got. But if I was to take on, say, venture capital or some sort of higher interest bank loan, where there was maybe some security in there, they don't understand the e-commerce space, let alone the Amazon space, where if you turn to your bank and say, oh, my account's been suspended, they wouldn't have a clue how to react, and might even pull some clause in the bank loan to say, right, well, we want repayment within 90 days or something stupid like that. So yeah, I've kind of assessed the risk for myself and my risk threshold with the financial kind of mechanisms that we use has probably just about been reached. Particularly with venture capital, I listen to Rand Fishkin quite a lot, actually, and I feel like if you haven't read his book Lost and Founder, it's definitely worth a read. And his whole story is very interesting, being obviously the founder of Moz and now at SparkToro. But I was listening to another podcast with him the other day, and he said it several times, but he was kind of not even tongue in cheek, but saying, like, when one of his friends or somebody in his network comes to him and says, hey, we just raised capital and we're going to the next stage, he's like, oh, well done, but then turns around and says, your business is finished, sorry about that. So it even though these people are getting pats on the back, those savvy people are the ones that really understand the fact that it's not quite the outcome that you really want for a business, and actually growing it from the ground up, and strong organic growth is a really good way to go. And I believe that's the direction that Rand's going with SparkToro. If he isn't, he's definitely going a much more risk managed route with the capital that he is investing in that business.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess you got to be willing to take on some pretty serious financial risk. And as you say, it depends on the nature of your beast. And, you know, if you've got a very, very established business versus one that's been around for 3 years and maybe it was good for a while and it's getting more competitive. And I guess it depends on a few factors. But yeah, you got to be up for some pretty major risk. And I suppose this is one of those things where diversification is the answer, one of the answers to risk, whether you're in investment in the the stock market or indeed in businesses. And the downside to that is a lack of focus. So it comes down to an investment strategy question, I suppose, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett says, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket. Other people say, most normal people would say, diversify your asset allocation. So I guess you've gone that route. So tell me a little bit about this idea. If you've talked about financial capital versus intellectual capital. So that sounds like a nice idea. It sounds reasonably obvious what that is. Intellectual capital is your know-how, your knowledge, your skills, I guess your connections to other people, right? But mm-hmm. and financial capital is obviously, you know, either debt or equity in the balance sheet terms. So how do you sort of make that more actionable though? Because that's a nice theory. I know you've got another concept that you're I'm dying to share with us. So tell us about that.
And because the FCIC thing is, or financial capital, intellectual capital thing, is sort of how we arrived at monetizing our skill set. So just to hang on that point for a second, I'd still argue in many ways that we are still putting all our eggs in one basket to a certain degree, because the skill set we're leveraging is still the same skill set we're leveraging inside the business as we are, inside my e-commerce business as we are within Future State Media. So there is a core competency there. It's just our monetization method is slightly different. And that's kind of a core concept in what I come on to next. Intellectual capital and financial capital, doing a stock take within your business of what you have. And, you know, like you say, if you have a business that has owns a warehouse or owns property, you could equally remortgage that and liquidate that straight into financial capital, which allows you to grow. So the whole concept is how do you convert abstract cash or cash that's locked up into financial capital steadily and systematically in a way that then allows you to grow your business utilizing that financial capital. So it's a framework you can use whether you're looking to grow an agency or if you're in an Amazon business, actually, you know, sitting back with a cup of coffee and thinking about what you have in terms of intellectual capital, financial capital, assets is the way to probably think about it. And then thinking about, well, actually, how do we monetize those and how do we shift those more quickly? It might even literally be, I've had a conversation this week about reviewing the assets you have in terms of stock. You know, how does your MOQ relate to how quickly you're turning that stock around? If your MOQ is a year's worth of stock, it's, you know, you're locking up financial capital when you should actually be moving that financial capital and making it work more for you and put it into stock that actually turns 3 to 4 times a year. And that concept of kind of reviewing your business and thinking more about how do we get more financial capital out of all what we've already got? So not necessarily always thinking, right, how do I go and raise money, but how do you do more with what you already have? It's a core concept behind the kind of the process of doing a stock take of intellectual capital and financial capital, because it'll make you realize how much your financial capital is actually locked in the business and how much is available for growth. So yeah, the big thing there with intellectual capital for us is that it relates, there's a mechanism by which you create intellectual capital, and it comes back to something called the two rooms. So there's the innovation room and the engine room. Within the engine room, if you can imagine, is your dirty diesel engine that isn't necessarily the sexy business. It's the operational thing that generates the cash that keeps the business moving. Trying to make a translation over to another model or framework would be, say, and to look at it as a cash cow within the STAR principle. So that's the business that kind of keeps the things ticking over and keeps your financial capital moving around. Now, the other side of this, and it's the innovation room, and it's a function that isn't necessarily alive in all businesses, isn't it? Or it's more or less alive in many businesses. And the innovation room is taking your financial capital, small amounts of your financial capital, and creating innovations. And that could be innovations in the way that you market, innovations in the way that you finance, innovations in the way that you have a product, you know, your product innovations. So this is very, very applicable to an e-com business. And how are you deploying your financial capital to do that innovation whilst also keeping the lights on and keeping the engine room running? So that's that's fundamentally what we kind of got to with Future State Media and the e-com business. We had this very alive innovation room that was developing all of these methods for generating traffic and scalable strategies for traffic and conversions for e-commerce businesses. And they were being deployed right the way straight back into the engine room business, the bit that was generating the cash. And we were using very small amounts of cash to develop these innovations and test things out quickly and seeing if they work. And you know, when I say quickly, it might be that an innovation needed to take 9 to 12 months. That still might be quick in the context of certain innovation. Test ideas as quickly as you can, and have a kind of system for innovation that then feeds those innovations back into the engine room and makes them standard practice, basically. So we had a very healthy innovation room, and still have a very healthy innovation room. There's lots of stuff we do inside the e-com business that I wouldn't necessarily do an offer for clients just yet. But I have no doubt over the next few months, in 6 months, 12 months, we'll release those mechanisms and those tools and processes into offerings as well. Regardless of whether it's an agency or an e-com business, the idea of having innovation very much alive in your business is a key one.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, what it also helps me make sense of, following your journey over the last sort of 2.5 years that I've known you in the mastermind, sometimes being worried and even saying to you, please make sure you make some profit at some point, and being a bit concerned about the amount of time you spent on the innovation side. But I guess what I was not doing is looking at a bigger picture. I mean, yes, you've got to not run out of cash. And I know that your cash management is very precise, and actually you're very, very good at the cash flow projection accurately, which is critical skill. But outside of that, I realized that having seen, first of all, that it can take 9 to 12 months, which I guess I've been trained in the Amazon space, that's alarmingly long. Normally you're looking at it maybe a couple of months if you're lucky, that people have the attention span to try a new traffic source or whatever before they kill it off. But the other thing is that over 12 months, I've seen some payback, for example, from, I know you're off your influencer marketing, which I know is not necessarily your main sort of drive, or that you're not aiming to just get traffic from that. But I did see that you managed to sell one of your products out or launch it very heavily using just influencers. And that was a good proof of concept. But then also another sort of few months down the line, I'm seeing, that the on Amazon thing that looked like the meat and potatoes for most people, and this looked like an optional extra, and reasonably so at the time. I think now is starting to look like the percentage of sales that you'd expect to spend on Amazon, its ads, is edging up above the 10% mark. And obviously, if it starts to edge up much further than that, it eats very, very seriously into profits, even gross profits, never mind the overall business. And thus, the validation of needing to innovate in the off Amazon thing is very, very clear to me now. And it's interesting how it's taken quite a long time to sort of validate that and to see that coming. I guess you've had more faith in innovation than I have, and the most e-commerce sellers have, and the other members of the group, I guess, start off skeptical, and that's not a bad attitude for any internet marketer. But then I'm beginning to be convinced about, yeah, we've got to deal with this off Amazon thing. So very interesting to see that. So let's come back to the skeptical questions. Surely this kind of conflicts with the idea of focus, but what about the idea of 80-20? If you're going to run two businesses, surely you suddenly exponentially increase the complexity of your life rather than simplifying to what works. How do you respond to that accusation, sir?
You do. You most definitely do. And it, if you were to follow the 80-20 principle in terms of what's performing now and what's not performing, and cutting off what isn't performing right now, then that sort of mentality is the type of mentality you sort of need to have within your engine room, within your operational function of your business. That makes complete sense. But if you were to do that with regard to innovations and your innovation room activities, you're going to cut off innovation before it even has a chance to be validated. And that's why I refer to it as two rooms, because you physically need to take yourself out of one room and put yourself in another, because the different rules of gravity, different rules of physics, different rules of chemistry apply in these two rooms. So you mentally need to be in a different space. So you're best off physically being in a different space. That's where the conflict and the contrast with 80-20 really comes in. 80-20 was built off the back of a number of reasons, but I'm going to say one of the core things was about prioritization, helping you cut through the crap basically and see actually right what the 20% I really need to focus on that are delivering 80% of my results, because that helps me prioritize getting my business out of this situation or moving the business forward onto growth. So it's really useful when you want to do that prioritization and then concentrating on that 20% and really, you know, kind of monetizing that 20% in the engine room. But equally, you need that prioritization should also help you understand the fact that there are directions in which the world is moving, that the things around you are moving. So prioritization of what works now makes sense. But if you know that Amazon ads, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, all these things are getting more expensive, and you know that over time, these things are going to become unprofitable and not economically viable for your business, there's also a way of applying that 80-20 rule and saying, right, okay, so I need to dedicate some of my time and resource here to the mechanisms and the concepts and the strategies that are actually going to deliver profitability for the long term. So it's about time frame. if you really break it down, if you're going to 80-20 it based on what's delivered for you over the last 3 months, then you're going to get certain results. You know, you're going to be very critical. You're going to constrain all of your financial capital within the engine room, and your innovation room's going to die. You know, that's kind of how a lot of businesses are actually run.
This
is a common kind of way of thinking.
No, but I think it is. And also, I think it's how a lot of e-commerce businesses die, because the very crass, simple example is nevertheless very real, or was back in the day when I started an ASM 3. I shouldn't even mention them because I do not endorse them for various reasons. I mean, mostly because they didn't train me up properly, because they just had a simple model that worked for them and they tried to teach everybody else without thinking about other people's situation, like, we might want to source from China. But anyway, I remember just back in the day looking in the Facebook group and you'd somebody, wow, I made $50,000, and then, wow, $100,000, I'm so grateful and humbled, which is like the humble brag as we know it. And of course, then I don't know where those guys are. Most of them disappear, because what happens if you've got one product that does really, really well, and this is the crassness of the non-innovation thing on Amazon, the danger of it is very immediate and real. It's not just going to happen in a couple of years. It's that everyone else just copied the product line or went and sourced the same damn products and put their own private label on it, reduced their price. The profitability of that product would disappear within 6 months. And that, of course, everyone who's ever sold on Amazon ever, or even researched it, discovers the truth of this. So the idea that innovations and optional extra is just blown out of the water by that. Never mind the longer term trends, which are a bit more gentle. I always think that with the Amazon ads cost increase, for example, it reminds me very much of that metaphor that you put the frog in water and then just boil it from cold gradually. And at some point, the frog dies of heat and doesn't really notice the warmth gradually increasing. And I think people are in huge danger if they take a 3 or 6 month view on Amazon of missing that trend with Amazon ads, because there's obviously daily and monthly variability, there's seasonality. I think you really need 2 or 3 years data to really differentiate between the seasonality of ads and the fact that they're just going up. I think, yeah, that you're so right. The time frame thing is super critical. Some product innovation things are crassly obvious, but some things really don't show up in the short term. And I'd refer people back to Jeff Bezos, who famously, you know, will take a 7-year view, where most people who were CEO of a publicly listed company had to think about the next quarter's results, because the market tends to go, oh, the Amazon's profits are slightly below what was projected, and slam the stock price by 10%. And Jeff Bezos has refused to play that game, and he's reframed the game that Amazon stock plays, which is to say, forget about profit, which is extraordinary mind game that he's played with the stock market for 25 years. I mean, just amazing. But it goes to show how you can kind of reframe the game, as long as you don't get out of the business, of course. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so look, what are the practical applications for applying this? I mean, it's a good abstract idea, I get it. How can one sort of implement as an e-commerce business owner, whether you're thinking perhaps of monetizing your skills in an agency or just innovating more on product design, which would be the more classically e-commerce focused response? How can we pragmatically implement these innovation room and the engine room?
Yeah, so I'm gonna kind of give you the solo seller version, but I'll also give you the seller with potentially a virtual team version, because there are two different ways that I'd probably go about doing it. If you're a solo seller, I think it's very easy to get tied up in the one percenters. So you're going to spend your week and dedicate your time to fiddling with keywords. You probably do too much fiddling with PPC. You may even do some fiddling with Photoshop. You're probably spending too much time in Facebook groups, these types of things. So when you really evaluate your time, you could be critical and say, right, I'm going to set myself a schedule and I'm going to time block. So to use that mechanism, saying, right, okay, on a Tuesday afternoon, my time from 2 till 6 in the afternoon is going to be spent on innovation. And that's going to be doing research, it's going to be listening to stuff that's outside of the Amazon sphere. You know, for God's sake, go and listen to something other than this this industry. Learning marketing from other Amazon sellers is not necessarily a great idea sometimes. It's a good idea to go and learn some marketing from people who've also operated outside the space. Because you'll learn things that you'd never have thought of within the Amazon space. So that's a very basic one. Set up the knowledge gathering system. Because what you'll find, particularly if you've got the entrepreneurial spirit that sits behind you, and I've mentioned the two rooms, but the thing that keeps this thing alive is the entrepreneurial spirit, the desire to learn something and then turn that learning into a process, a system, and get it into the engine room to increase performance. You know, it's the creative side of your brain, but also allowing some structure and development and moving things forward. So the entrepreneurial part of your brain will help you gather that information, but once you've gathered that information, you'll want to do something with it. So that's a way of igniting that innovation room part of your business. And it could be marketing, it could be product, it could be that you're going to spend the entire afternoon looking at other products in other spaces to see what other innovations are going on in adjacent sectors and seeing what innovations you could bring to your sector and your product, you know, as opposed to everyone else going, oh yeah, so, you know, bundle it, put an ebook with it. You know, these aren't innovations, guys. these are so the trodden path. Go and do something else. Go and see what else is going on out there. And don't just dream something up. Go and find something that works somewhere else and then adapt it for your application. You know, there's no need to be the trailblazer in all of this. The other people have blazed that trail well before. So go and do that. So that for me is the practical starting point. How you then go and do that application is really having a commitment to it and having that desire to continually do that commitment week in, week out, where you might spend that 2 till 6 on a Tuesday afternoon doing the research. And then next week it might be putting together the system or investigating the tech that you're going to need to go and put that system or process in place. Reaching out to your network of people to see if you can get somebody to give you some more information and those types of things. But continuously do that time block and continuously challenge yourself to put together a project and treat it like a project that needs to have a deliverable, that you're going to have something that's going to drive your business forward. And typically the outcome that a lot of Amazon sellers are looking for is increased sales, but that innovation could equally be, how do I increase my sales price? How do I reduce this cost of my product? These types of innovations are all necessary innovations in an e-com business. So dedicate time to them. And like I say, innovation actually demands the idea that you go and find things that may have been done before, but in maybe different contexts. So that's a key one. If you're a solo Amazon seller, that's definitely the way I'd approach it.
Excellent. Just to reflect on that, I think the idea that you're not really innovating, but you're borrowing innovation from other people and then repurposing it for your industry is a really critical one that you put your finger on, just to put a caveat on the word innovation. It's not really innovation. As they say, that the pioneers, the ones who come back with the arrows in their backs, or I guess they don't come back, maybe they're brought back in a funeral procession. So that's a very good point. And I think also turning it into a deliverable, I think, is really important. But I mean, a professional project manager will say, and I've worked with a couple on tiny bits of projects, nothing major yet, but they will say, okay, what's the deliverable, i.e., you know, measurable numbers or number of sales by what date? And then you work backwards from that, and what are the mechanisms and what the milestones are? And I really think you're right that I mean, I've been very bad at that. I think talking of which, this may lead naturally on from the solopreneur to the bigger picture doing it, because I would say some of us aren't naturally good project managers. I would absolutely fess myself up with that. In which case, then, if we've got more than one person involved, what's the best way to structure this?
So I think I might have mentioned previously in a previous interview about the way that I structure my team, and the fact that we have essentially a workspace online, because we're all virtual. We're spread out across Britain and in the Philippines. And yeah, we have a virtual workspace in which we kind of communicate and we do our innovation. We have what we call the lab, which is a forum online that kind of helps us to share ideas and share information that we found elsewhere, and then for us all to kind of learn and benefit. But having some mechanism by which you can easily share information and share insights, not just here's a link to an article I read, but here's the link to the article I read and here's the insight I got from it. What did you get? That's the type of conversation you need to be initiating with your team. And the big point there is that that's a cultural shift. So there are benefits to having the innovation room alive in your business that go way beyond the fact that you're innovating and you're moving forward, but also into the cultural impact it'll have on your business. If you're just running the engine room, things can get really freaking boring. and you're doing the same things. It's almost like, here's the SOP and the checklist for this week we've done. And I can't stand weekly meetings like that. I at least dedicate 25% of our weekly meetings to what have we learned this week? Because it's such an important thing for me to keep that innovative spirit alive and make it really clear to everyone on the team that it's their responsibility to learn something this week. And it sounds like such a basic thing. And you're like, oh yeah, surely everyone's off reading this, that, and the other. But no, again, coming back to the principle of have a deliverable and deliver against it. One of our objectives, a company objectives within the business ongoing, is about development of intellectual capital, development of knowledge and capability through the team. So it isn't just about me saying, I'll go and do this training course. It's about the team actually pulling together that information and actually developing the training themselves for the other members of the team. So the best bit about the innovation room is the fact that instead of, in my opinion anyway, is instead of being stuck in the engine room doing the same old thing week in, week out, you're actually freeing up your team to do stuff that's tapping into the more creative side of their brains. And actually, if you're providing limited financial capital for them to go and do these little innovative practices, what you're actually forcing into your business is a mechanism of being ultra resourceful. So as opposed to, you know, constantly falling back on the idea, oh, that's a 10 grand idea, we can't do that. Or that's a 2 grand idea, we haven't got enough capital to do that. You know, what can you do for 20 quid? Come on, what could we go and test? You know, that sounds like a really interesting idea. What can we go and do? And more often than not, the team will go and do something by next week, having not invested a penny, and just kind of being resourceful and put themselves out there. So Jeff Bezos goes on about having a day one business, constantly feeling like putting the pressure on almost that it's a day one business, and we haven't got years of experience. And, you know, this is the startup sort of mentality, if you like, but. The best bit about that is, yes, it does apply pressure, but it applies creative pressure. And it's a different type of pressure to just kind of an endless list of tasks. So the cultural impact I think you can have on your team as a result is huge. So the way that, you know, practical application of how I would go and manage that right now, straight away in your weekly meeting with your VAs, if you term them VAs, I never term my team VAs, they're team members. And again, there's a mentality thing there that we try and instill. But yeah, weekly meeting with your team members, say that 25% of that time is going to be dedicated to discussing things that have been learned over the past week that they didn't know before, and get into that rhythm. And as you go through that process, you'll identify things that might be worth learning more about, doing some more practical application of, and thinking about in a more kind of divergent manner than just the standard checklist. So that would be how I would start the process anyway.
Excellent. Well, that's some really great inspirational. I think you just put your finger on a couple of things for me. I mean, I think one is that, by the way, having a weekly team meeting is a very good idea. I've kind of completely fallen out of that. I know we're into that. You were involved in some of those a while ago. But really, I think you're right about, first of all, things can get very boring when you're just going same old, especially if a team's really bedded into an idea. It's not really worth even discussing. I think you should have a mechanism in place which just measures, you know, which tracks things automatically. For example, with the podcast we produced as a production line of podcasts, as mini digital products, if you like, we've had over 400 of them. We've got an Airtable which everyone updates. And apart from sort of the odd update, just heads up, I've just interviewed Ashley and I'll put it on the Airtable shortly, that sort of thing. But we've tracked that all. We've got a mechanism in place. And if you don't have a mechanism, I guess the first thing to say is, how can we put a mechanism in place, right? So in the end, the mundane things should be more automatically tracked. And you should really, it's like a bad corporate discussion. We've all been in meetings where we say, okay, let's discuss the agenda from the last meeting. And now let's, you know, put in any other businesses, when suddenly people open up all the problems when everyone wants to leave and go home. Instead of which, you should say, right, tick, 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 here are the things we've already measured before we walked into the room. The boring stuff has been taken care of. Now let's just make sure that we double check that. Okay, fine. Now let's get into the meat and potatoes of actually discussing that which is worth discussing. And I think that's a really great cultural shift that you've just pushed us toward there. And it's really good. The other thing is the lab, the forum for discussion, because you've set one up for Amazing FBA, which I proceeded to ignore, and to my shame, sorry to admit this on air. But one of the reasons is because I think I didn't really understand what the purpose of it was. And like a lot of these things, it's not about the tools, it's about what you're trying to achieve. And I realized that actually, if you treat the idea of separating the innovation room from the engine room suddenly makes a huge amount of sense of, the forum's not for the day-to-day engine room stuff. That's what Airtable or Asana or whatever else is for. That's for the innovation room. And that's a really great mindset shift for me. That's kind of unlocked a door for me. So that's for this e-commerce seller, that's been a really helpful thing. We better wrap this up because I've got to go and do some things, but this has been really, really thought-provoking. I think very, very actionable. And I know you and I thrashed around this idea of how to put it across the most actionable way. Hopefully that is actionable for people. I know you've got a little worksheet to go through to think about how this might work at amazingfba.com/engine room. And if people want to get hold of you about all these different services that you offer around external traffic and stuff, what's the best way to get hold of you, Ashley? Where can people find you to find out more about this?
Yeah, if you head on over to futurestatemedia.com, you'll see the various services we offer and various blog posts and things like that that'll get you started. And there's some, obviously, resource sheets that you can download, as you've pointed out. And yeah, if you want to contact me directly, feel free to drop me a line at ashley@futurestatemedia.com. That's ashley@futurestatemedia.com.
Great. Amazing. So Ashley, it's just remains for me to say a big thank you for forcing us to think about being interesting as opposed to just creating SOPs and hiring VAs, which everyone's obsessed with doing. As you say, if that's what everyone else is doing, it's not going to be a competitive advantage apart from being dull. So very important, not just to keep your business fresh, but also to get ahead and stay ahead of the competition. A really interesting strategic level tool, which in the end is pretty simple. Be excited to see where you're at in a few months' time, having run your own innovation room.
Cool. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you.